Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. Welcome back to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. This is a very different episode this week because this is our first patron chat. We have some of our VIP patrons here with me today, and I am excited to get to know more about them, their stories, how they discovered J.R.R. Tolkien and his legendarium and his novels or his movies or the movies about his novels. You know how all that stuff works. And we've got two guests with me this week. And by the way, this is a brand new feature. So if you are on the Patreon and you are a VIP patron, then this is something you have access to. And we'll be meeting on Sunday nights, the last Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. Eastern time as of right now. So if you're listening to this in the future, maybe that changes for schedule needs. But for right now, that's when we'll be meeting. And you're welcome to join us next month if you're already a VIP patron, or you can go to patreon.com/LOTRLorecast and you can sign up and join us next month. But with me this week, we have Azel Razel and Matt. Welcome to the show, fellas. It's so nice to have you here and to actually get to talk to you and meet you. I'm going to call you out individually so we all don't talk on top of each other, but Azel Razel was the first to jump in the chat. Azel, can I just call you Azel? Does that work?
Oh, yeah, that's good enough. No problem here.
Nice, nice. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you. Can you just share a little bit about yourself for everybody?
Hello, my name's Azel Razel. I've been a long-time Lord of the Rings fan, I think starting originally with the movies, I guess, as I guess most of us did. I've since from there always had the odd curiosity, wanting to know what the questions you see around the place that I guess get answered here a lot. Why did so-and-so do this? What's the file of Galadriel? What's this random city that they call out to in the heydays? And wanted to know a little bit more about the lore. And through that, I guess I played some of the games, and that began with the Battle for Middle-earth series is the one that I guess mainly sort of expanded my knowledge on the lore, especially the Rise of the Witch King series.
Yeah. And yeah, very cool stuff. Those games are great.
Yeah, it was good the amount of sort of extra things that aren't necessarily in the books that they cover there. And then from there, I, for some reason, just jumped straight in the deep end and attempted to read the Silmarillion. On the third time, it stuck and couldn't put the book down. From then I went on to eventually the Lord of the Rings trilogy for the first time, and then The Hobbit. So I sort of did it in a weird backwards reading way, but I guess doing it that way, when I read The Lord of the Rings for the first time, I was surprised at how many callbacks and references there were to the Silmarillion within the book that I just realized not many people would really be understanding how this means or the significance of this line here. And it was sort of filled a bit more like a more complete picture as I was going throughout it.
Awesome.
And then through wanting more of that itch scratched of deep lore, I then eventually came across this podcast.
First
ever podcast.
Oh, wow. First ever. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's a fun story. Matt, also welcome to the show. Do you have a similar quick little, like, give us the like Azel Razel did, the quick little version of the journey, and then we'll dig into it a little bit more detail. But who are you and how did you discover Tolkien?
So I was out shopping one day with my brother at West Edmonton Mall in Edmonton, Alberta.
Okay.
And we had a ridiculous amount of money for the age we were to go buy some stuff. And I had about $10 left. So I heard about this book called Lord of the Rings. So I picked it up and struggled a little with the first, because I was, I think, grade 7 at that point.
Yeah.
So I struggled with the first 100 pages, but then it hooked and I plowed through the rest and I read The Hobbit and then found the Silmarillion and just devoured that. I've read it through 2 or 3 times now, and I honestly consider it my favorite book, bar none. I just love the poetry of it and the quality of the language. And if you ever, this is weird, I know, but if you ever read the chapter, The Battle of Unnumbered Tears, to the soundtrack from 1492, The Conquest of Paradise by Vangelis. It fits so perfectly.
Oh,
It
wow.
almost brings a person to tears.
Oh,
So
wow. Yeah.
yeah, it's just been a lifelong journey for me since I was, all of 12, 13 years old. I've read the books numerous times, and then I got into podcasts through COVID lockdowns, and so I found numerous different ones during that time, and this was one of them, and I've stayed with, I think you were on episode about five when I found you, and
Oh wow,
I
yeah.
have li
That's a
listened
while
since.
back now, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been with since the really early days, and became a Patreon subscriber maybe a year in or so, and caught up quickly with the bonus episodes. But yeah, I loved it to pieces, so much so that I have a couple of jobs, but one of them is a director at a camp, and we don't use our real names. We use names of people from literature or movies that are meaningful, and my camp name is Frodo. So
Nice. That's
yeah.
awesome. That's so fun. That is so cool. Wow, what great stories. I'm so glad that you guys took the time to join me today. And thank you for being a part of this and supporting the show and all of that. And this is part of what's so fun for me when I get to do these patron chats, because I do these on some of my other shows, but it's brand new for this show, and getting to know other people's perspectives and how they're incorporating how these stories are so meaningful to us, because they really do. There is something about them, you know, there's something that changes your life. Like, I'm like you, Matt. Like, I was in fifth grade when I picked up The Hobbit. I was probably about seventh grade when I picked up The Lord of the Rings for the first time. I remember, so you went to the bookstore, I went to the library, and the Fellowship of the Ring was unavailable. So I had to pick up. And I just picked up the Two Towers, not knowing anything, not and being a kid and not knowing, like, yeah, if you start on the second book in the series, it's not things aren't just going to make sense to you. You're going to miss out a whole lot of context. And I got about a chapter or two in and then took it back. And I was like, I don't understand anything about why these guys are just running for so long. And then eventually got back to the first book, and then everything stuck, right? It got to this point where I was like, wow, this is difficult. It's a harder book to read than The Hobbit is. And it stuck with me. Azarezal, how old were you when you discovered everything?
Coming up to the mid-30s in a few years, I'm probably would have been about, I don't know, grade two or three, I think, when the films were coming out. So quite young at the time,
So
actually.
you saw
But
the films when you were like in second or third grade?
yeah, that's it.
Wow. Wow.
So it was definitely a young age, but I guess it's always been my interest because I guess the video games and everyone at the time, everyone liked Lord of the Rings and everyone thought of them as the I guess the movies that they were and are now, and you could sort of not really go anywhere without anyone people talking about it whenever I think it was Christmas time when they were releasing,
Yes.
and
Yes.
then the next one would be coming out and everyone would be waiting to see what that is.
Yep. Yeah, 3 years in a row, I believe, was the release schedule. And I was in college at the time, and I would go home for Christmas every year. And the reason I've talked about this on the show before, the reason why I was even interested in these at all was because my dad was into them and suggested I read them. And so I would go home, and my dad and my brother and whoever else was home for the holidays, we would all go to the movies together. So that was such an amazing experience at that age to be able to experience that with the people in my life. That is really cool. That is some really, really cool stuff. So let's talk about your favorites. So you guys both talked a little bit about some of your favorites. Matt, you mentioned the Silmarillion, bar none, you said was your favorite book. Azarezal, do you have a favorite book, or actually, here, let's start here. Being that you started with the movies, do you prefer the movies still? Is that your defining thing, and the books are still
Ooh.
ancillary to the movies, or are you more like we are because we started with the books? And don't be afraid of saying one way or the other. A lot of people will say, well, obviously the books should come first because they were the inspiration for the movies. But I totally get the perspective of, like, the movies feel definitive to me because they're what I experienced first, and the books felt like delving deeper. So, like, the perspective can shift, right? How was it for
Exactly.
you?
I think you're right there. It'd be both. I was just surprised, I think, when I did eventually read the books, how much the movies did get accurate. How many, I guess, hints were there, even with chapter names and scene titles and songs, like a Shortcut to Mushrooms and A Knife in the Dark, and all these are just little hints of the book. But I guess I have any and all content, so I enjoy the books for what they are. I enjoy the films for what they are. I think if I did have to pick a favorite, it probably would be the Silmarillion, just because of the expanse of that and the origins of everything and the detail that we get and seeing, I guess, how it all began in the world before the fall, so to speak. But I think that, yeah, anything and all, even up until even Rings of Power, I'm glad that we are getting that, and I think it looks beautiful. And sure, there's the odd flaw in there here and there, but it's not enough to ruin the show for me. And I can't wait for third season coming out this year, I believe. But I'd say Silmarillion's my favorite overall. Books and the movies I can view as separate pieces of media. I'm not too sure if certain things would have fit in the films if you just took them directly from the books, and then I guess vice versa, you probably had to cut out some just to, you know, you can't. The people already complained about the amount of endings, and I don't know if the Scouring of the Shire would have been necessarily the best thing to put in there, but we do get hints to it, I guess, with the mirror scene.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think the filmmakers haven't always made the best correct decisions, but I feel like they made more right decisions than wrong in translating things to
Absolutely.
film. And I think that is one of the correct decisions to make. I saw a post recently where people were debating like the theatrical version or the extended version, which one's better. And things I think
I
have
think that
kind
one's
of
always the extended.
Well, that's my thought too, is that the my natural assumption is the extended version is clearly better because it gives us more stuff, and a lot of that extended stuff is very accurate to the books. But I can see why people could perceive that as being, no, it actually slows down the pace of the films, and as a film, it is better as a theatrical release. So I can see that perspective, and I think that this is another one of, and you mentioned the Rings of Power. Like, I don't know how you would do a story about the second age of the world without needing to invent extra stuff because it is so sparsely explained in Tolkien's writings. You would have to add extra material to make it work. Now, you can debate the accuracy of that extra material and how much it actually correlates with, you know, correctly with the lore that we do have. But a lot of the people who complain about those things actually have bad complaints because they'll make complaints that they don't realize are explained in the lore and because they aren't like versed on everything. And honestly, none of us are. None of us are Christopher Tolkien, you know, like, so for any of us to put a hat on and say, well, I know everything and I'm gonna, we don't, you know, but I think that's just part of it. So here, let's dig into the Silmarillion a little bit because you guys have both stated this is your favorite thing. Matt, I'm going to jump back to you. What about the Silmarillion? What parts of it resonate with you the most? Is it the, I don't know what the best way to call the stories, like Beren and Lúthien or Túrin's story. Like, it's almost like those are the epic romances, not romance in the like romantic, you know, kissy, huggy kind of sense, but romance in the like romance novel, like old timey sense of like epic story, that kind of thing. I feel like there's that stuff. You've got like the beginning with like the origins of the world that feels very Old Testament-ish. You've got even the stuff towards the end where you start to see other pieces of the lore kind of get fleshed out that connect more to the novels. How do you feel about all that, Matt?
Well, it depends on kind of when I encountered it. Well, the first time I read it, what I loved was just like the grandeur of it and the heroic tales. And like I loved Beren and Lúthien, and really loved the character of Finrod, and grieved every time one of these characters died, because I never read a book like that where it became apparent partway through that the good guys are not going to win this battle. Like, it's not even possible for them to win it. And I never read anything. I read David Eddings' The Beleriand series, and it was very similar type of fantasy where good guys were in tough, but then in the end, they managed to survive and get through it. And it was apparent this one was going to be very different. And I love the heroic nature of it, but I struggled as a kid a little bit with the idea of sometimes the good guys losing, and
And a
then
lot of times
Turin's
in the
story.
Silmarillion, like a lot of even not like, yes, the greater loss of like, hey, we need to get bailed out by the Valar by the end. But like almost at every turn, there's loss. Like even in their wins are just like, there's a lot of loss in the win. Like you're right. It happens across the whole thing.
It does. And as a kid, I didn't necessarily resonate with that. I love the grandeur of the story and the heroics of it and whatnot. But I struggle with that piece. But then when I came back and read it as an adult, that was actually the piece I love the most because it felt truest to life and the reality that life itself isn't something that where the good you want to hope that's the case, but it's struggle and it's loss, and sometimes there isn't always the victory for the good as much as we wish it otherwise, and it just felt real and it felt like you could really resonate with the themes of struggle and loss, and like Turin's whole arc, which I didn't really get as a kid. I loved as an adult simply because of its tragic nature and the fact that he's not a bad guy. He was just he tried so hard to do what was right so often, and because of his nature, whether it was his anger or his rashness at times, it would often go the wrong way for him, and he never meant for it to ever happen that way. He tried to always, in the end, do what was right for the whether it was for Doriath or in Nargothrond or wherever it was, but it always went sideways on him, and it just felt so tragic and so real that this when I've read it as an adult, I've just really connected with it, and then also the themes. Like my background, well, my main job is that I'm a Lutheran pastor. And so much of the theology that he works into his work is just stuff I've actually used in the sermons because it's so powerful that especially those earlier themes of the music of creation. It's just so gorgeous. I've often said that C.S. Lewis is more open and apparent, the great Christian apologist of the 20th century, and yet I actually much prefer the kind of theology that Tolkien, in a very subtle way, lays out, because I feel Lewis sometimes is a bit conservative, a bit status quo, comparatively speaking, and I thought Tolkien's is just so breathtakingly beautiful in comparison.
That's an interesting point. Almost like, and maybe I'm incorrect here because I haven't read Lewis in a long time, but Lewis's stuff always came across, especially from the theological bent of some of his works, as both more apologetic, like you said, but much much more rational. Whereas Tolkien always comes across as the person who understands the core emotion in a like a deeper sense, in that sense of like where you talk about, let's go to tragedy and things turning sideways, even when you have good intentions, how things just don't always work out, and the suffering and the sadness of existence and life, and yet how there's beauty in that. Like Tolkien, something about that as a young teen, uncovering that and understanding that there's beauty in sadness and suffering, and that there's like without suffering, without sadness, where is grace? Where is mercy? Like those things don't exist without that. And I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that you want to expand on, but I always found that very engaging in a way that I'd never found other places.
No, I would absolutely resonate with that. It just that notion, of that beauty in the struggle, because that the third theme that gets introduced when Melkor brings in the discordant theme and seems to turn awry Iluvatar's great plan for creation. And yet it's that beauty in the midst of discord that was the actual true purpose of creation. Like, in the midst of struggle, in the midst of hurt, there's still, it's still something good, still something beautiful in the midst of it. And it almost feels like Sam's little speech at the end of the second movie, where he talks about, why do we struggle? Because there's still something worth struggling for. There's still the beauty. There's still good. There's still hope. But it doesn't exist unless, unfortunately, there's also the sacrifices, like they come to know at the end of the books, with Frodo having to leave, because he's lost everything, basically.
The pain,
His
pain and
health.
suffering.
Yeah.
And it is a solution. It is a form of struggling with the problem of evil, which, if we're going theological here, how can an all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful God create a creation where there's so much suffering and struggle and all of the what feels like evil in the world? And Tolkien seems to answer that for his universe in this idea that, like you said, Ilúvatar already knows that that's the way things are going to play out. And when Melkor moves against him, he turns it into something even greater and more beautiful and more grand because of that struggle and the response to the struggle. And that is foundational and yet so clearly explained through the use of musical analogy. Like that, it's so cool because he had such a clear understanding of all these things and was able to really encapsulate them so well.
Absolutely. So that's, for me, why the Silmarillion will always kind of be that number one book, because it's just so deep. There's so much going on under the surface, and then it gets translated into all the other books and all of Tolkien's works.
Yeah, that
This
spirit
is.
proliferates all the rest of the things that he does. You find
Oh, yeah.
you feel like there is consistency across the series. Heck, even in The Hobbit, which is probably the most, just kind of happy-go-lucky of the stories, Bilbo returns home and things are different. Like
Yeah.
he returns home to struggle. Things,
Yeah.
he's not just like, hey, now I'm rich and I had a great adventure. It's like, yeah, no, your neighbors are going to treat you differently from now on. Things are different.
Yeah. Well, even I just read The Smith of Wotan Major. I think I said that right. And similar themes there, like this nature of encountering fairy. But it's not just like you go in and have a great adventure in Narnia and then that's it.
Yeah,
It's
it
there's
changes you.
real beauty, but real loss, because he can't stay and he has to come back, and he has to, and it's not translatable. And it's something, yeah, that stays with him, but there's a sense of loss and tragedy even there, even though it's left him changed and it's beautiful, and he probably would never have chosen life without it. So.
Yeah, any and it's such a good analogy even for just living your life and growing up and getting older. You get older, you become wiser, you become more capable, but at the same time, things change and you suffer loss. You're no longer the person you used to be, and there's always something left behind. We could talk about this forever, but I need to bring Azel Razel back. We've been going on about this stuff in the Silmarillion. Do you have a similar perspective, or are there other parts of the Silmarillion that really stand out for you?
I do have a similar perspective. There are other parts that stand out, though I think a lot of it just overall regarding that book is, as you two have been saying, it's why I guess I sometimes come across as a crazy person trying to explain to people why Lord of the Rings and these books are so good, as there is a deeper meaning behind them all. They're not just stories as much as they are fiction. They have lessons, I guess, that you can learn from them on. Not necessarily to how to live your life, but just how to, I guess, view life and approach it a different way. Maybe learn to see the positives and some of the negatives of life and whatnot, and especially if they are the times that we're going through. But I think one of my, I guess, that aside there, just pure preference in regards to a favorite section would probably be around any of the times of the two trees at the beginning and in Valinor, just because it's not something that really gets covered much in many areas, and there's a lot of, I guess, big powers at play within the story. A lot of the Valar are present right then and there, whereas later on there's only mentions of them, or are pretty much, I guess, almost the only one really showing up around at the time. So it's good to just have some of that, I guess, the joys in paradise before having to leave, before Ungoliant comes along before everything just goes sideways, I guess, and all the biz that goes along with the Silmarillions and worlds.
Feanor and all of the tragedy that then befalls everybody from all of that. It makes me going back to that stuff that we get such small glimpses into what it must have been like for those elves, like arriving in Valinor and then living alongside these godlike beings who are a part of their lives, teaching them, employing them and showing up and like
Absolutely.
that's the kind of stuff I don't know that will ever well any form of putting that in like visualizing it in a film or like a TV show is never going to do it all justice because it's and I think Tolkien understood that there's only so much he could actually explain on the paper and leaving it mostly uncovered and mysterious allows our imaginations to fill in the gaps. Like, what is it really like to walk into like I don't know names fall out of my head Aule's forge while he's like smithing something amazing. What was that even like? Like we're never really gonna know, but we have a glimpse of it, and that is fun. Let's talk about some of the later stuff in the Silmarillion. Are there other stories at the end? Like, are you both somebody who like the tragedy of Turin is just so good because it's such a meaty tragedy that story really stands out? Or are you more on the side of like Beren and Lúthien and this idea that like this epic journey that actually works out in the end for the most part is pretty like is a little bit more appealing? How do you feel about both of those, Matt? I feel like you're probably more on the Turin side.
Now I am. As a kid, I loved the Beren and Lúthien epic, and I still really, really do. There isn't a part of that novel I don't like. But yeah, the Turin story is a powerful one. And then in the tour, when you did the walkthrough of, because I had never read the Unfinished Tales, and so when you did the walkthrough of Tur's approach to Gondolin, I thought that was really cool to kind of flesh it out, because we don't get any of that backstory
Oh man.
in the Silmarillion.
Yeah, I
And
wish we
I
had
love that
more of
story.
that. Like if oh man, if we got more of that would be amazing, but yeah, it gets to a certain part and it's like, well, that's all we have. So there you go.
So I love those. And like the last reading, and I've been listening to the Andy Serkis audiobook version of it, and it's just,
Likewise,
yeah, it's
yeah.
all resonating with me. And even to the point where when we get into the piece around the fall of Numenor, that part really disturbed me as a child, with the whole like human sacrifice piece, and just seemed so out of keeping with like the valor of the elves and what you read in the first age. But again, like Turin, I really, really can not connected, but really appreciated the depth of storytelling there, and just how epic that really was. Even though it was dark and disturbing, it was still a really engaging narrative. And even again, going back to the Unfinished Tales, Eldarion, is that right? I love that whole story there about him going to Middle Earth to kind of shore up the defenses and already
He
recognizing
had
the
good
threat.
reasons for going away. They were selfish also, but he was also he, like it's not black and white. That's what's so wonderful about that story is again, kind of like Turin. Everyone's just doing their best. Everyone's doing the best, and everyone's interpreting the information they have as best they can. And sometimes things just don't work out. And that, how real is that? Like that's what it means to be human. That's what all of us are doing all the time, is we're just doing our best. And sometimes we just bumble around into each other and misinterpret things, and things go sideways. And a marriage doesn't work out, or like with Arrendis, or or as much as he shores up Middle Earth and tries to do good things, then the lineage of kings just continues to decline and make bad decisions after him. Like there's a lot there. You bet that living in Florida changes the way I dress every year. During the summer, it is way too hot and humid to not wear something that is light and breathable. And now that I found Quince, I've been wearing their clothing all the time. I wear my linen shorts as often as I possibly can. And I've been so much cooler, even inside the house, I haven't had to run the air conditioning as much, which is kind of crazy. And right now you can get Quince European linen pants and shirts, perfect for this weather, starting at just $34. Their tees are also soft and easy to wear. Lightweight cotton sweaters are perfect for cooler summer nights. They have options for everything. Plus, their prices are 50 to 80% less than similar brands, and they work directly with ethical factories to cut out the middleman, so you're not paying for the markup, you're just paying for the quality. Plus, I've noticed that they have some other things that I'm very tempted to get. Everything from sofas to ceramic cookware, premium bedding, all sorts of stuff. But if I was to recommend just one thing, go get some linen shorts. It will change your summer, I promise. So go, elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/ringslore for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/ringslore for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ringslore. So, Razzle? What are your thoughts on this? What are you, Turin, Baron and Luthien?
I think I'm more of a Baron of Luthien kind of guy. I enjoy the, I guess, the bigger epics, the larger, I guess, characters from different parts of the story and play with, as Matt was saying, Finrod earlier, and then having, I guess, parts of Thingol in there, and then some more scenes with Morgoth, and I guess their descent into hell, and Sauron actually doing something, even if it is just fighting who won,
getting beat
and losing, but
getting beat by a dog. Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Just Sauron showing up in these is always fun too. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't do it too often. So it's nice to see some. I've always been, as much as I enjoy a lot of the heroes within the journey, I am a fan of some of the villains as well. So it's always a part that draws me to it, I think. And just seeing both sides of the stories and their reasoning for it, even if it isn't the most just, they believe it to be, and seeing how this leads to, I guess, the little aha moments later, such as Beren losing his fist with the Silmaril, but then when he turns up to Thingol later, he goes, "Well, actually, I'm still holding it, and it's right. Just inside a belly."
Right. Yeah, it's burning him from the inside. Yeah.
It's a nice little way to sort of connect it all and to have that victory in the end, even if there was pain for him. I do feel the eagles may show up a little often than I'd like, but that being said, I'm willing to just suspend my disbelief and take the story as it comes. I'll happily enjoy any story along that line.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they do feel like the Deus Ex Machina of his work.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
But not enough to ruin the enjoyment.
But also, I mean, they are kind of literally a Deus Ex Machina because they were created by Manwë, and like that's kind of their job is to be watching over Middle Earth and to swoop in.
Yeah, when you have the story and the lore behind it, it's nice to know that there actually is, and them being their own sort of race rather than just birds. It's nice to know that it's not as, I guess, plot hole driven as what, say, some people would have with their little blithering to Mordor and whatnot.
Right. Okay, so let's expand back to The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. That's like the most popular novels from the series. Do you guys have favorite characters from those? Are there different sections or characters that always resonate with you and you're like, oh, this is the best part? Because there is such variety as we get, especially through The Lord of the Rings. You've got like the hobbitish stuff at the beginning, you've got the fellowship breaks apart, then you've got like Frodo and Sam and Gollum doing their thing, and then, you know, everything else going on with the Two Towers and the conflict in Rohan, and then you have everything coming to a head at the end with the Return of the King. Matt, where are you with all of that? What are your favorite bits and characters?
Yeah, my favorite character, again, not just within the context of these books, but honestly, one of my favorite literary characters, bar none, is Frodo, and just his journey and the fact of what he did. But again, not to always dwell on the tragic side, but it was the knowledge that he's doing something that is ultimately impossible. And there was really there was no way he was ever going to actually do it. That at some point the ring would choose to break him, and it chose when it did, maybe to its own detriment, because then you have that moment of eucatastrophe, which I've actually broken out in a sermon.
Yeah,
and
great.
I'd explain it.
Awesome. Yeah, everybody should know about eucatastrophes. I mean, and that is a very Christian notion. I mean,
it is absolutely
based on Jesus. Like, let's just say what it is. Yeah, that is what that is. Oh, it feels like a terrible thing, but because of this terrible thing, salvation. You know, like,
right.
That's what it is.
And that whole Gollum narrative, because of that, like, there's a real purpose why Bilbo saved him. There's a purpose why Frodo showed him mercy, even when Sam kind of didn't want to. And then what it led to at Mount Doom, and the fact that it was because of mercy that they were able to do what ultimately would have been impossible if mercy hadn't been shown.
Right.
And just the whole whole like resistance that Frodo still manages through all of that journey. Yes, you know, eventually it's going to break him, but he manages to be far more resistant than most. Like, even Sam, good-natured Sam, can barely hold it for a day without tempting him to the point where he almost can't give it back to Frodo. And that part of the movie is when Sam realizes that Frodo is physically failing and he can't take the ring from him, but he says, I can't carry the ring for you, but I can carry you.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
guts
such
me
a good line.
Every time.
Yeah. 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 Their relationship, their pairing, there's so much, man, I could of course do an entire episode about all of that, but, it's so good. Yeah. Frodo's resilience, Sam is not giving bad advice. That's very rational advice. This guy, we can't trust. He wants to kill us and take the ring. Yeah. Like, the rational decision here is let's leave him behind. Let's get rid of him because he's going to ruin it. But the rational decision wasn't, in that case, the right decision. It was the merciful decision that was the right decision. And that, like, and on top of it, like I talked about in a recent episode, Gandalf. I mean, Gandalf knows from the beginning that it's an impossible task. He knows that Frodo is going to have a better chance than anyone else, but nobody can do that. And so he relies on his instincts. He relies on his gut. He relies on his faith that in the end, we all have our parts to play. Just like he talks to Frodo in the episode I just did. He says, you know, like, Frodo's like, why didn't you kill him? And Gandalf's like, who are you to decide when somebody lives and dies? And also, I can tell that he still has a part to play in the story, for good or ill, but that's how the story's supposed to go. So let it play out. You know, like, it's genius. It's so multifaceted and yet so well done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Azarazo, where are you at with The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings and characters and moments and things like that? What really stands out to you?
Honestly, I think that is one of the tougher questions, considering you've got to make sure you separate the films from the books.
Yeah, and you can talk about the film versions. I point out the film versions, too. I've been going through the books because that's kind of the point of the show. But there are definitely moments where I will quote, like, I'll say, in the movie, this thing happens. And even when that's not identical to the books, if it captures the spirit, if it's just interpretation of the spirit in a what I would feel is a correct way, and oftentimes I feel okay with that, you know, like, heck, even the Rings of Power at times, I think, interprets the spirit of what is there well, even though maybe people might get upset about, like, the way it was portrayed on the screen or something like that. So what do you think?
Definitely.
Yeah. Like, you can talk about a movie moment. Sure.
I think as Matt was saying, Frodo is a pretty good one. Definitely the book version over the film version. I don't know how I feel about sending Sam away when you're right on evil's doorstep, but
yeah, that part is a little funny.
In the book, he's a lot more, I guess, you can tell he's suffering and he's struggling, but he's still got his wits about him a little better and willing to make a bit more informed decisions. But as much as it's probably one of the easier ones, I enjoy book Faramir quite a bit, just because of how, I guess, unwilling he was to even be tempted by the ring, or even put that as an opportunity to happen. He does not want to take that risk of sending it to Gondor and what that can lead to. So he just assists Frodo and Sam as much as he can. And it's nice just to to know that sort of that the people out there who are willing to sort of have the willpower to say no and have that self-control and have that those moments to
Yeah, I also
I
really
guess.
like Faramir in the books, and I remember watching the films for the first time, and wait, I'm just waiting. I'm like, when is book Faramir going to come out? Because this guy is not exactly the same person. By the end, he kind of comes around, but like, I was like,
And a little bit in the third movie, but not so much the same as what he was in the books, and some of the moments as well from I think Aragorn, but overall Aragorn is a little too good, I guess, but true to the story reasons that makes sense. But I like, I guess, his moments of like where he shines through, no particular moment, but just where he's willing to sort of step up into the role or to be a leader or to just sort of be what the people need right now, and to
To lead, he leads from the front.
yeah,
He's
lead from the front, exactly.
exactly the right kind of leader. He's the one who gets in the front and says, "I will do it. Come with me." Not you go
And
over
then
there
he
and do a thing.
empowers you and encourages you to get on that front line with him.
And he's a very, I don't know. I think anybody in any role of leadership could learn amazing things from just that example that would make them better leaders. And there's risk involved with that, of course. But I think that risk often is mitigated by the respect of the people who you are leading and their willingness to then step up when you need help because they know that you would do the same for them. And that is a brilliant example. So yeah, I enjoy both of those characters as well. So this was a question. So my wife and I, before we got on the call with you guys tonight, I was talking about how we got this call set up and what we might talk about and those kinds of things. And two of you joined. There's 33 patrons who could potentially join. I wasn't sure if anybody was going to be able to make it or who would show up. So thank you for showing up. But she was like, "Well, what if I called in?" I was like, and we're just joking, and I'm like, I'll be like, "Oh, so you've been a patron on the show? Who are you?" And so I started like quizzing her, like, "Okay, so when did you start reading these books and watching these movies?" And you know, she enjoys the movies and things, but she hasn't read the books. But then I was like, "Okay, so who's your favorite character?" And she's like, "Well, Sam, I really like Sam." And I was like, "Cool." And I was like, "What about some of the badass ladies of the stories?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, Galadriel's pretty cool." And I'm like, "What about Eowyn?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, Eowyn's pretty cool." You know, like, so we started going to that kind of stuff. But
Galadriel is pretty cool.
yeah, I mean, they're very cool. And you know, and just joking with my wife, I'm like, "You're she runs a research lab. She's, you know, she's a leader in her own right." And so like, she has a lot of respect for, you know, other badass women to get things done, you know? So I always thought that was cool too. But yeah, for me, I think both of you are correct about a lot of this stuff. I share very similar perspectives on all of those characters. I think in the end, I think that there's something about Sam and his willingness to be so loyal, and it's not even his responsibility in the beginning. He has nothing to do. He spies outside the window, and he just ends up getting dragged into this journey. And then he's just loyal from the beginning, and he's doing the best he can. Sometimes he doesn't have the right advice, but in the end, like you said, he carries Frodo up the mountain. You know, like, and then in when they return to the Shire, he has such a big role in freeing the Shire, and then being mayor of the Shire, like, multi-consecutive times, and bringing about this golden age by literally regrowing the Shire with all of the knowledge and all of the willpower and the maturing that he did on his journey. And it is such an interesting flip from Frodo, who is chronically damaged and has to leave, and Sam being empowered. And like, the first glimpse of that is like the willingness to actually talk to Rosie, you know, and how that leads to, you know, a foundation for the rest of his life, a marriage and a large family, and he grows the Shire along with him. And I always thought that arc was also beautiful in a very different way, but I found that very cool as well. Are there any other things that really stand out to you, Matt? Let's jump back over here. Here, let's do this. Instead of talking about characters, let's talk about like moments in the story or like set pieces? Are there certain places, like a lot of people are like, oh, when they go through Moria, it's so good, or the Battle of Helm's Deep, or, Pelennor Fields.
I mean, all those obviously, I enjoy the set pieces and moments in the story. Gandalf standing against the Balrog and just such a powerful moment of utter defiance in the face of an enemy he's not 100% certain he can actually best. And in the end, he can and can't. It costs him his life to do it.
Right. Well, he does so in the same way that everyone else who has ever bested a Balrog does. They have to
Yeah,
sacrifice
exactly.
themselves to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And
So
he
I
knows it.
love
That's the thing, is that he, at this point in the story, he knows that everyone who's ever gone toe to toe with a Balrog has had to sacrifice themselves to do so. Like, that is the knowledge. He's wise, right? He's lived all this time. He knows these stories. So he's going, well, I guess this is my Glorfindel moment or whatever. And like, all right, I got to do what I got to do. And he's willing to do it. And you're right. I mean, I get chills. I'm like, oh, it's so beautiful. It's so like
Yeah,
powerful.
it's such a wonderful moment. But yeah, I think one that always stood out, partly because it's just a shadow of what they once were. So I remember reading the Lord of the Rings, the Return of the King when I was the first time around, and they make the comment that the force that goes to the Black Gate is but a shadow of a vanguard of the former glory days, and yet they're still willing to go and trying to do what they can with the hope that their Frodo is still alive, still doing his thing, and they're trying to buy him whatever time they can by pulling the remainder of Sauron's forces out and to confront them and hopefully buy Frodo some measure of time. Was just like, it was both extremely like uplifting because they're willing to make this last stand, but also like kind of tragic or almost this hopeless feeling of, yeah, I mean, they're never going to manage to stand long because they just don't have the person power left to do it, but they're still willing to do it.
Right.
That
It
was a
is
powerful moment.
directly analogous to the moment we just talked about with Gandalf. They're
Yeah.
going to certain doom. They know that they have to sacrifice themselves in order to achieve this thing. And then miraculously, something else happens and things work. You have a eucatastrophic moment. Is that how you even say
I don't know,
that?
but it sounds right.
Sure, why not? But yeah, like both of those moments are actually like there. It's one person as opposed to a group of people, but they're all doing the same thing. They're all willingly sacrificing themselves for the greater good. Yeah, and that's the sacrifice is always one of those things that I don't know, it gives me chills because it is the greatest thing you can ever possibly do, and oftentimes you're willing to make that risk that make that I don't know to just do that in light of not being certain about the outcome. And in both of those cases, they're not certain. Gandalf isn't sure he can take out the Balrog. The military isn't even certain that they're going to buy Frodo enough time, or if Frodo's even still alive in that moment, yet they're still willing to take that risk in order to and sacrifice in order to try to achieve that. Yeah. I've always found that both of those moments very, very cool. I agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Azarazel, what about you? What about the set pieces? What about the other moments?
As you mentioned, it's hard to go by the Moria scene overall, just an entire sequence of that all. But I think for me, it's just part of the any moments we get glimpses into the larger world, just due to as Tolkien always decides to write, just keeping things sometimes left as a mystery. You don't know what is over that mountain range, and so due to that, you fill it with your imagination, and it makes the world feel more real.
And
And
bigger, yeah.
absolutely. And I think it's just all those that we are at the third age, and everything is really a former shadow of what it once was. And just going past ruins of Eregion and Amon Sul with Weathertop, and having Minas Ithil now being Minas Morgul, and just having the these things, these great situations that they could have been living in had the world not gone as terrible as it had, or I guess it's always meant to be with the way Iluvatar's always in plan, but still it's just it's sad, and there's always that somber feeling I've noticed when going throughout as those things are never going to be the same, they're never going to be as big as they were. But when you still get those glimpses, like with the Argonath and with Minas Tirith, just being able to be in those moments of grandeur of the old, it's of the elves, it's always nice to have any of those moments, just to have a glimpse behind the curtain of how life once was before all the magic started fading from the world.
Yeah, that is a really cool thing. Like so many of these things, in my mind, it connects to like very real experiences. Like in our world, everything from, 1,000 years ago is just feels ancient. Everything's old, right?
Yes, yes.
And we've been able to uncover, at least with our science and archaeology, enough of that stuff to know to kind of piece a certain amount of our history together and be like, oh, well, these were the Babylonians and these are the Egyptians and these are, these early civilizations. But what's interesting to me about that is that you go back 2,000, 2,500 years to those ancient peoples, and they were stumbling on the ruins of people who came 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years before them, with just as much wonder as to what is the, it was something like the city of Ur was rediscovered or talked about by a Greek historian or something. I might be mixing names and places. I don't remember all the details, but we go back, 20, 2,500 years, and Greek historians are going, there's some ancient civilization that seems like it was built by giants because the rocks are so big. And that's what that feels like, right? Like you see like you said, the Argonath, like to people of the third age, there's not a manpower left in the world that could build those. How did they get there? It feels amazing and mysterious. And that is really cool. But it's also really cool that like we still feel that way as human beings, like that we go through that in our own world too. Very cool stuff, guys. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show here. We need to wrap things up. I appreciate it so much that you guys taking the time to get together and chat about this stuff. It's always fun to nerd out about our favorite things, and I hope you are able to join me next month along with others. If you would like to join us as well, you can do that. In order to real quick be thinking about final thoughts, kind of your like last thing, anything else you want to say or wrap up or ways people can get a hold of you or something like that, I'm going to take a real quick moment to thank our patrons and everyone who makes this possible. So thank you too. And we have some new patrons who signed up in the last week. Leon G, Barack Crowbama, I'm the president of Crows, wonderful name. Johan S and Christian D, thank you so much for joining and supporting the show. And then let's see if I can get through all the VIP patrons. And some of these people might show up on future episodes and future chats. So thank you to Fulcrum, David S, Daniel Nightweaver, Capenna, Richard J, TJT, AK Music Lover, Barney D, Azzle Razzle, Blade of Anduril, Lori B, Norwegian Maiar, Mason Weathertop, Jezzer, Gimli a Break, Divine Madman, Rosie Rose, The Bestest Boy, Ginger Fury, Huon is My Hero, Aldarion is Right, Avariel, Party Snacks, Single Ent, Norwegenius, Bruce W, Chris H, Artemis, Kirasi, Das S, Hunter, Turumbar, Silver Star, and My Name is August West. Thank you so much to everybody who helped support the show. All right, we got to wrap it up. Thank you guys again for joining me. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Let's start with Azzle Razzle. Azzle, any last thoughts?
Thank you for having me. I hope to see more of these in future. It's always nice, as you said, to nerd out on some Lord of the Rings, and to any who are on the fence about it, please don't be hesitant. It'd be nice to have the nice full community there just to hear everyone's thoughts and views. As you were saying, Tom, earlier, it's always nice to get those perspectives that maybe you hadn't considered originally, and that someone else will say something from a different angle, and you thought, oh, that's actually a really good point just there. And it'll be good to get more people together for that.
Absolutely. And the material is so dense. Like, as I stated when I started the show, I am not the be all end all. I do not know everything. And I am 100% open to learning things or reevaluating things or being reminded about things and be like, oh, I need to read that again. I haven't thought about that in a long time. And the topics of future shows, like I stated before, will be determined by the patrons. So if there are certain things that you just really would love to talk about, bring it with you and suggest it as a topic. I'm sure there are other people who would be like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's talk about that. So it's this chat is going to be a monthly thing, and it's going to change and evolve over time. And we're just going to see where it goes. So thanks again, Azor. And Matt, any last thoughts? Any last words?
No, it was a lot of fun. I mean, enjoyed, just like you said, nerding out and talking with people who have the passion and knowledge of this content. Because, yeah, I attempt this conversation with my oldest son, who does have a huge wealth of knowledge for different kind of IPs like this, but not Lord of the Rings. So he just kind of stares at me blankly. And so it's beautiful to have a conversation with people who know and can have that reciprocal kind of conversation. So it was lots of fun, and I was glad to get on the call today.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I think that's something everyone who listens to the show can probably relate to, is the like, oh, I'm so excited about this thing. And the other person just stares at you like, okay. Love that moment. So come join us, and we're not going to stare at you and just go, okay. We're going to go, yeah, that's a cool point. I like that. And then we're
exactly.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for both joining me and everyone else for continuing to listen to the show and being a part of this. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. This is the big episode for this week. So this is going up on the feed, and it's an hour long. It's going to take place for the bonus episode along with the regular episodes, all contained in just this one episode this week. And that's kind of how that'll work. And then I'll be back next week with another regular episode and a bonus episode, just like usual. And we'll work through May, and then we'll have another chat, and we'll see who joins us for that one. But until then, have a wonderful time hanging out, listening to the other episodes, and hope your rest of your week and month go well. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.